Hi, my name is Marvin L. Storm, host of the Business Exit Stories podcast. For the last two episodes, we've been talking a little bit about my backstory, a little bit about who I am, where I came from, what my motivation and desires are with this podcast that I am starting. In the last episode, we talked a little bit about from the time I got involved and off to college through my first several businesses in college as I left college and became an accountant and working for a large national accounting firm. And when I left that accounting firm and with a business partner started our own business and was really fortunate to have that business be very, very successful. And a little bit on how that business wound down. And I'm going to talk a little bit about how I really use that experience of my first successful out-of-college business and the path that success took me to where I am today and the reason for the podcast. So let's get started on this episode. As I mentioned in the last episode, my partner and I had decided after a pretty successful run that we needed to move on, primarily because our objectives and goals had changed after being in business for nearly 10 years. As I looked around at what I wanted to do, I was fortunate enough in the leasing business that we had. We also managed leases, and that leasing management contracts that we had allowed some time as the lease revenue came in that we were able to give me a time to kind of look around without a lot of financial pressure. So that's what I did. I started looking around, and we had done some equipment leasing to some franchise companies that had really gone from the startup phase of working out of a small warehouse, garage type of operation, right up to having hundreds of franchisees and even considering offering a public offering. And I watched this, and I was just amazed how they were able to do this all with other people's money. People in franchising, if you're familiar with how a franchise works, a franchisor perfects a model that makes money and all the systems are in place, and the franchisees who have maybe very little experience in that business but has capital and the ability to work hard joins the franchisor by becoming a partner, you know, a franchisee. And they take that proven business model and they execute it. And if they follow and kind of paint by the numbers and execute that business model, they too can be successful because the franchisor has figured out the methodology, the business model, how to make money. Well, I watched franchise companies do this, and I was intrigued with this model because a franchisor can leverage their expansion, expand their brand by using the capital of their franchisee partners to execute on their business model and take a small percentage of the revenue and expand fairly quickly without having to go to the equity markets or raise investor money or borrow large amounts of money, taking on a lot of risk. And so this franchising is nothing more than an expansion strategy for companies where they partner with franchisees that bring the financial capital as well as the human capital into the business partnership. Well, I had the opportunity to look around at different franchise models as after the leasing company wound down and my partner and myself were going in different directions. Now, being somewhat analytical, I spent maybe the next 6 to 12 months and maybe a little bit longer looking at all different types of franchises out there. Since I knew very little of franchising, I decided to educate myself, and this kind of became my avocation. So I started studying franchising. I became a franchise salesperson's worst nightmare. I started calling up franchise companies as a prospect, you know, someone that was interested in their franchise, to learn more. When I had a serious desire to learn more, wasn't necessarily going to buy every franchise that I looked at, but I was certainly interested in finding out how these franchise companies operated and what the mechanics were and what the business models were and how they made money. So that's what I did. I became kind of a professional franchise prospect. And I must have looked at, I don't know, 75, 100, maybe 110 different types of franchise companies out there. I would get the franchise disclosure documents. I would study them. I would go to open houses. I would visit the franchise locations. I would talk to franchisees. And before long, I really understood the franchise model a lot. And I made some early decisions with the type of franchises I would be interested in partnering with or getting involved with. Number one, I decided I didn't want to go into the food business because there was just too many moving parts to the food business. I had spent time being a short order cook and washing dishes when I was a kid. I sort of understood the food business from that perspective, but I realized, and probably wisely so, that there are just too many moving parts in the food business. Those that are successful have a lot of capital or a lot of specific expertise in that business. I decided I didn't want to go into a franchise business that was capital intensive with equipment, because I observed that, like in the printing business or something like that, that you have huge investment in printing equipment. As the printers kind of evolved into computerized digital printing, that technology evolved and changed very quickly, and it was capital intensive, and there was a high degree of obsolescence. I decided I didn't want to get involved in any business that had a high amount of inventory because of the shrinkage issues and the seasonal issues and making decisions on the wrong type of inventory. An inventory that you would eventually have to write off. I decided that I didn't want to be involved in the business that had a lot of accounts receivable that always created cash flow issues. Sometimes if you're growing fast and you have a lot of receivables, you have to figure out a way to finance those receivables. And so that didn't appeal to me. So as I looked at the different types of franchise concepts out there, I didn't want franchise concepts that were real estate intensive, where you had to have a specific type of building or you had to sign these incredibly expensive long-term leases. Anyway, after a lot of research, I really zeroed in on a sector of the franchise business that there wasn't a lot of activity in at the time. It was just emerging. It was new. Most of the franchise activity was in food and things of that nature. But in the service-oriented franchising, which was relatively new at that period of time, intrigued me. I started really focusing on that sector. And I became fairly knowledgeable on any new franchise concept that was out there, any new category of franchise concept that was out there, I started looking at. Interestingly enough, a new category emerged in the franchise sector that was in the service business, and it was in the mail and parcel field, and that was a brand new category. Now, this was really the beginning. Then this later became dominated by mailboxes, etc., which eventually became the UPS store. And I really was intrigued by that. In fact, I can close my eyes right now and remember the first time I walked into, in Southern California, I walked into a mailbox store. It was in Orange County, and I walked in, and I looked at this business, and there were no people in it. There was just lines and lines of mailboxes, and I was fascinated with this, and I very quickly counted up the number of rows of mailboxes. I counted how high they were and how many were in each row and in each column, and calculated that this was really a real estate business. They were renting 6-inch by 4-inch by 1-foot pieces of real estate for $10 a month, sometimes $20 a month. I calculated how much the lease probably was on the building they were renting, which was probably 2,000 or 3,000 square feet, and calculated what the rental income was that and what the overhead was. And I says, holy smokes, this is really a profitable business. So I did a lot of research, and there were several franchise companies, mailboxes, etc., being one, that had emerged, and there were several others at the time. But I very quickly, one thing that bothered me is that this was not anything proprietary. Anyone can rent a space. Anyone can buy mailboxes and put them in. And I figured that market would become saturated fairly quickly. And so I started thinking, what could be done differently? And sure enough, there was another company out there that had started out in the mailboxes market segment, but had kind of evolved into a specialty shipping business. And I thought, well, that's interesting, where most of the market was gravitating toward the mailboxes, and that market did become very saturated within a few years. And did become dominated by a major player in that field. There were very few others that were specializing into a niche. And I think if there's anything that I've learned in my career, is that niching, and the deeper you niche, sometimes the better off you are if you can become a specialist and known or branded in a specific niche. And so that's what intrigued me. So long story short, I eventually became a franchisee with my first franchise into a specialty niche packaging and shipping business. It was called The Packaging Store. I ended up running seven locations on my own. I eventually became a regional franchise for that company. And a regional franchise is kind of a mini franchisor for a specific geographical region where you were responsible for not only your own locations, if you had them, but also helping the franchisor recruit franchisee partners in that region and finding locations and doing some of the training and ongoing support. And as the business arrangement in that type of regional franchise, the concept is sometimes called area representative, or some people call it area development, that you got 50%, anywhere from 40, 50, or 60% of the revenue from the royalties. You had to put up all the capital. You had to build the infrastructure to support that in that part of the world that you were responsible for, your geographical area. And you were kind of the mini franchisor or the joint venture partner with your franchisor in that area. And that's what I became eventually. I started out with my single location. You know, I went from the white desk environment of structuring leases and leverage leasing and all different types of leasing to now working in a retail environment behind the counter, in the back room, packaging up, going out on pickups and deliveries of all different types of equipment. We really specialized in shipping antiques and business equipment and art and anything that was fragile, large, valuable, or awkward. We would package it up and ship it from point A to point B. I remember one of the largest transactions I was involved in was shipping an entire estate from the high rise in San Francisco to an auction house, Sotheby's auction house in New York City. I filled up an entire moving van and packaged up millions and millions of dollars of art and antiques to get them prepped and shipped from one part of the country to another part of the country. And, you know, tens of thousands of dollars of revenue generated from that one job. It was an exciting business. I loved that business and even had a large warehousing facility where I consolidated all of the items from the retail collector locations. And I made a lot of money in that business, liked it a lot. But what that did for me is it gave me a taste of this regional franchising. And so I decided that my business model was not going to be necessarily exclusively as an operating franchisee, but, you know, a regional developer. And so I formed a company, and that was a regional development marketing company. And I went looking for other franchise companies from around the country that were not located in California. I was located in the San Francisco, Northern California area, and companies that were in Virginia or Ohio or Denver or Florida or Massachusetts, all those companies I eventually became regional franchised for. And at one point in time, I had four different regional franchises that I had under my management and had over 100 franchise territories, locations up and running. So I was really became a multi-concept regional developer and did that for a number of years and really became a specialist in that area. Well, what this really led to was one of the franchise companies that I was a regional franchise to. A member of the board of directors approached me and asked me if I wanted to acquire the company. The founder of that company had kind of gotten caught up in his own success, which happens a lot of times, as I happened with me in my early business career. I hit the ball over the fence and was really thought that I was the reason for the ball and the bat, as I mentioned before, and that it was all me that was the reason for my success. Well, with this particular franchise founder, he took on that self-important attitude and started spending a lot of time out of the office, a lot of time traveling, a lot of time on vacations, And as he was out of the office, the market got more competitive. The market changed. The business started to evolve, all of which he was more or less unaware of. Or if he was aware of it, he certainly wasn't concerned about it. And he had decided that he wanted to exit the business. But when he went and got some valuations on what his business was worth, he had a business partner at the time. His business partner had a different idea of how to grow the business and the direction that he felt the business should grow. And they had a falling out, basically. And so the founder, the major shareholder of the business, decided that if his business wasn't worth what he thought it was worth, he wasn't going to exit the business, and he was going to double down and relaunch or reposition the business for a future exit a few years down the road. So he went out and borrowed a bunch of money to buy out his partner and to buy out the regional franchise operators and his franchise concept, of which I was one. And he leveraged up the company. He had never had any debt, never taken any outside investment, completely 100% owned by he and his partner. He went and borrowed and leveraged up millions of dollars of debt to buy out his partner and the area regional developers like myself. And for the first time, he had debt service now. And he was not a terribly sophisticated individual. When it came to financial management, he was successful and had been successful and never had to worry about reporting to anyone because he didn't have outside shareholders to worry about, or a board of directors to worry about, or a banker, or any debt service to worry about. But now all of a sudden, all that changed. He now had a board to report to. He had a lender to report to because he had borrowed millions of dollars. And he was re-entering a market that had become very competitive and the dynamics had changed. And I was aware of most of all of this because I was working this business every day. I had my own locations and I was a regional developer. Kind of fast forwarding here a year or so, I was approached by the board of directors asking me if I wanted to buy the company because the founder was unable to make his debt service payments. And they were considering foreclosing on their loan and left them figuring out what they were going to do. And so they approached me as an option of selling the company. And after 6 to 8 months of negotiation, I actually ended up acquiring that company. So I went from being a regional developer to actually owning that franchise company. And out of that franchise company, I spun out a B2B concept because it was basically a retail-based concept. There were hundreds of locations around the country that were retail-based, focused a large part of their business on small parcels. I had a big warehouse and did a lot of large things, and so I launched a business-to-business concept that focused on warehouse format, where the new franchisees that came in under a new brand were warehouse-centric versus retail-centric, and they focused on business-to-business and larger item shipping and almost zero small parcel shipping. And launched this concept and built up from no locations to locations all over the country, and eventually ended up exiting both of those businesses, both the retail business and the business-to-business concept, and that allowed me to profitably exit those businesses. You know, at that point in time, I thought I would kind of kick back and enjoy life, and been working hard most of my life as a kid up till the time I sold these businesses. And I thought, now it's time to smell the roses, sort of. But as I started to do that, it became very evident to me that I was not much of a golfer. I had never had this much spare time available to me, and I had no real purpose, I guess. And I really got antsy. And so I started thinking about, what can I do now? One thing led to another. And so I decided I would start getting back into franchising. And so I actually acquired another regional franchise concept, but I quickly decided that that wasn't really going to work. I had now owned my own franchise companies. I had been successful at building them from scratch. And as I engaged with these emerging franchise companies that were just getting started, It was a very frustrating experience working with entrepreneurs that had never been in franchising before. While it was true they were successful in their own little niche of the concept they had built up that was a very franchisable concept, for them to take direction and to grant me the rights for the regional in the area, what my plan was really to recreate what I had built the first time around with my regional franchises and these multiple different franchise concepts, I just decided that this wasn't going to fit my now more mature franchising background, that I didn't want to take the time to mentor and school these emerging franchise companies. It was just too much of a frustrating experience. I really decided that after doing this for a while, that that wasn't going to be a model that I was going to be able to enjoy doing. Certainly there was a market there. The franchise business had moved on, had become much more mature. There were a lot of people doing what I had done. The multi-unit area developers, the regional franchising concept had become fairly popular. There were a number of companies that had become multi-hundreds of millions of dollar franchise companies based on the regional franchising concept. There's even several that were billion-dollar companies, some of which have exited with those valuations. And so it was a much more mature, proven business model. Yet, for my own personality and what I wanted to do, I really felt that I would be better served by whatever I was going to do it on my own. So I continued to look around in the franchise community. I did a number of franchise consulting concepts of people that were looking to franchise their concepts, and I would work with them for a period of months, sometimes up to a year. Sometimes I would recommend that they continue with their franchising and that they would make a great franchise concept, and in other situations, because of the personality of the founder and the capitalization of the founder, in some cases, I recommended that they not franchise, because I, having been a franchisor, knowing the risks involved, knowing the type of personality that you have, and being this very collaborative partnership type of mentality, some founders just don't have that. Entrepreneurial founders just don't have that. Sometimes an entrepreneurial founder has an attitude of, you know, it's my way or the highway. And that will not work in the franchise environment and in world. That just doesn't work. Franchisees are really partners. They should be treated as partners. And they are competent. They are investing sometimes their entire life savings into a concept, and they have to be treated with respect and treated with, being knowledgeable and, given the opportunity to leverage that capital, both human resources capital and financial capital, into a successful operation. And sometimes franchisors just don't have the personality or the infrastructure or desire, really, to do that. And so after doing some consulting, I really felt, what really do entrepreneurs out there need that they aren't really getting right now? And one of the things that I observed in my franchising experience, I brought hundreds and hundreds of entrepreneurs into the ownership of their own businesses. And one of the things that I really tried to do was help them become successful. And there are several components of success. There's success to get a company off of the ground, a new venture off of the ground, turn it to be cash flow positive, grow that concept to where you are not only earning a living, but you're taking out profits from that business and using those profits either to expand the business by location or by size of the business, by employee growth, or perhaps entering into different market segment growth. But you use the excess profits of the business to expand it. And then at a point in time, you need to monetize that by either passing it on to a partner or a family member, and then you exit the business. And that monetization event is really where most entrepreneurs don't do a very good job at it. Or that's what I've observed, is that especially in the franchise world, people will spend months researching the right type of franchise. They will spend hundreds of hours doing that. But yet, once they launch their business, they won't spend an hour. They won't spend only a handful of hours thinking about how they're going to get out of the business. So one of the things that I did and became a practice of mine was I would talk to my new franchise partners about the first day you are in business. Now, this goes for people that are, whether you're a franchisee, a franchisor, you know, starting your own business or buying a business, an already existing business. One of the things that you really should do, and you owe it to yourself and your family, is that you need to take on the mentality that the first day in business is the first day of your planning to exit the business. You need to put yourself into the frame of mind of every decision you make, everything that you do, every person that you hire should have a component of how this is going to impact my business down the road when I exit. Now, that's a big ask. I would say, you know, 1%, and that's being generous, of people that start a business have any idea or attitude on how they're going to get out of the business. It's just not on their radar. And you might argue that it shouldn't be on their radar. You should be concerned about what's happening today and growing your business today, not what's going to take place 5, 10, 20 years down the road. But you should have an exit plan. It should be on your radar. You should make decisions on how this is going to impact an exit. If you have no exit, one of the things I've observed, quite frankly, is that people that do not have an exit, they burn out. Burnout is 10 times more likely to happen to a person that doesn't have a goal, objective, or a vision of how he's going to get out of this business. If you have that goal, whether it's 5, 10, 20 years down the road, if you have that goal, you're working toward that goal, there's always the light at the end of the tunnel. But if you don't, then you really put your business in jeopardy. So one of the things I've always encouraged the people that I've helped get into business through franchising is that you need to start thinking of your exit strategy really from day one. And that as you grow and your business matures, you may adjust that plan, either extending that exit or bringing that exit forward to exit earlier, but that you need to have that plan in place. And if you do have that plan in place, your likelihood of burnout or making big strategic blunders is greatly reduced. So as I thought about, you know, what my rest of my career, kind of the point of giving back for all how good business has been to me, you know, all of my pursuits and businesses have been to me, how much they've benefited myself and my family, what could I do to kind of give back? What legacy could I leave? And I really thought that there's a lot of transaction people out there. There's a lot of people that facilitate a transaction, but those transactions are usually at the very tail end of the business journey, sometimes the last few months or the last year of that journey. And I thought, you know, if I could create a business entity, or in this case, a podcast or a business concept and model that could actually assist business owners in the process of how to think about their exit, how to position and plan for that exit, and perhaps put together a trusted group of advisors that could facilitate the exit, that I could really provide a service and a benefit to the business and entrepreneurial community. And so that's what's really brought me to this point of my podcast. Is I initially thought that my podcast, that I would interview entrepreneurs that were going to exit or had exited their businesses. But after chatting with some people in that situation, I decided, you know, perhaps a better model is to go to the people that do this every day. Go to the M&A specialists, go to the business brokers, go to the attorneys, CPAs that deal with the issues that come up in the exit process. and have them share their experience and the experience being in a format of stories. Share with me the stories of mistakes that were made, successes that were achieved, and deals that went sideways or blew up, where the entrepreneur, the business owner, was severely impacted, in some cases devastated. I've already had a number of experiences in, you know, kind of vetting this process and talking to the business M&A community and the business brokerage community of people that have taken a multi-million-dollar business down to zero because of strategic decisions that they made and mistakes that they made that precluded the sale of the business, where they should have had a multi-million dollar exit and they got nothing and had to shutter the business and close it down. So if I can share stories and have others share stories about how to avoid those missteps, how to avoid huge strategic and tactical blunders, I think I will have contributed a huge positive benefit to the business community, because there are no other real podcasts out there that talk about the specific business exit and the stories associated with it in the type of format that I'm envisioning here for the Business Stories Exit podcasts. And so what I want to do is invite you now, as I conclude this third episode, that is, you've gotten to know me a little bit about what makes me tick, a little bit about my career, the experiences that I've had of growing businesses and selling them. I didn't talk a lot about the businesses that didn't work out so great for me. I've had a few of those too. They are too few to mention, really, but I've had gone down some blind alleys, and I'll share those insights with you from time to time. But primarily the objective of this podcast is to share the stories, both good and bad, of how people have been able to exit their businesses, and what you need if you're a business owner or thinking of buying a business, of how you need to think about your business exit. And if there's one parting comment that I can make at this time, is that what I've observed more often than not is that business owners and entrepreneurs do not give adequate thought to how they're going to exit the business. They do not do the amount of planning that's necessary to structure a successful exit. Sometimes it happens just because they have a great business and timing is right and everything else works out right. But more often than not, they leave money on the table. They don't optimize or maximize the value of their business because of a lack of planning. So the objective of this podcast is to use the story format to talk about the different types of businesses out there, what made them successfully conclude with a profitable exit, and those stories that didn't end so well, and what you need to avoid. So this is Marvin L. Storm of the Business Exit Stories podcast, leaving you with a thought that everybody is going to have an exit. It's just a story of what that exit is going to be like. So whether you're thinking of buying your first business or you have a successful business you're thinking about exiting, I think the stories in this podcast will provide you valuable insights into what you need to understand about planning and executing on a successful exit. Until next time, remember, every business has an exit. At the end of the day, it's up to you and how you're going to make that one a good one or not. Join me on my next episode, where I will begin to interview individuals who have been involved in transactions with business owners. These are business mergers and acquisition specialists that have facilitated thousands upon thousands of business exits on an annual basis. You'll learn why and how these exits are successful and why some are not. Regardless of whether you're a business owner ready to sell a business, thinking of getting ready to exit your business at some point in time, or perhaps someone thinking of buying your first business, the Business Exit Stories podcast will provide you valuable insights on business exits of all shapes and all sizes and all types. Join me on my journey as we learn about these stories of how to exit a business successfully from the stories of those that have done it. See you on our next episode.